tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 26th of August, 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, today I want to look at what life is like in a multicultural area, an area that's been multicultural for quite a few decades now. And the news article doesn't actually mention the fact that it is multicultural, but I think that's a lot of the reason why it is such a bad place to live. The headline is, "If I collapsed, I think someone would rob me. Life in the least friendly place in the UK, where unhappy neighbours say, keep yourself to yourself, that's the best thing to do around here." It has just been branded the unfriendliest place in the UK, and people living for years in the miserable East London town of Barking say they agree. Now, Barking is multicultural, and as soon as I heard this, saying life was miserable, if I collapsed, I think someone would rob me, it immediately made me think of the largest survey that was ever done on diversity and multiculturalism. It was carried out by Robert Putnam. It's called The Downside of Diversity. Now, when Robert Putnam carried out this survey, it discovered that far from what he thought was going to be, that diversity improved people's lives, it was very obvious that diversity harmed people's lives, particularly their social lives. And he actually sat on the results of his survey for some years because he knew that it was basically proving what everybody on the right, all the nationalists, had been saying, and disproving what everybody on the left had been saying. Now, if we look at an AI overview of the study, it says the most famous study on the downside of diversity is Harvard researcher Robert Putnam's 2007 research. He found that high ethnic diversity can short-term reduce social trust, civic engagement, and community cohesion, causing people to hunker down and distrust both neighbours and own group members. Now, that sounds very much like what we just heard from the Daily Mail article, doesn't it? Distrust both neighbours and own group members reduces social trust, civic engagement and community cohesion. The key findings on social impacts were lower social trust. People living in mixed areas tend to trust their neighbours less. Now, this wasn't just saying, well, we trust the foreigners less. It's their own neighbours, the people that were of the same ethnic group, they trusted less. And that's because there is now another ethnic group there which your neighbour could be conspiring with. If there wasn't another ethnic group there, you would trust your neighbour more because you would know that there wasn't a temptation there for them to conspire with members of another out-group. And that's the reason why I think there is less trust of your own people group, because you would think, oh, well, there is this other people group there. It would make you bond more to your own people group. But it doesn't. It makes you trust your own people group less. Less civic participation, volunteering and charity work often drop. You don't see people going out and picking up the litter and tidying up the place anymore. People cease to have their concern to the place. They cease to feel that it is theirs anymore. It doesn't belong to them anymore. Why should they do these things for something that doesn't belong to them? Social withdrawal. Individuals may isolate more and watch extra television. Now, what Robert Putnam did when he actually came out and he produced this, he sort of altered things. And it says that here. It says he found that high ethnic diversity can short-term reduce social trust. No, he didn't find that. He found that high ethnic diversity reduced social trust. And he theorized that that may just be a short-term result. But he couldn't do a long-term result. He didn't do a study on places that had been multicultural for many decades. So he just guessed that it was just going to be a short-term reduction. But in actual fact, if we look at what it's being said here about barking, well, that disproves the fact that this is short-term, doesn't it? Because barking is still in this same situation after being multicultural for some decades. One grandmother told the Daily Mail she expected not to be helped, but instead robbed, should she collapse, and advised others to keep yourself to yourself. Now, that is exactly what you would expect to find, as it says here. Short-term social trust, no community cohesion, don't trust the neighbours, and literally don't even want to leave the house. I mean, that's what it says when it says that people want to hunker down and just watch the television. The London Borough of Barking and Dagenham has the unenviable ranking in a new study drawing on government data from a community life survey. The area might have given the world football stars such as Sir Alf Ramsey, Bobby Moore and John Terry, as well as EastEnders actor Ross Kemp, singer-songwriter Billy Bragg and Lord Carey, former Archbishop of Canterbury. Meanwhile, Dagenham's celebrity count includes former Ford Dagenham car plant clerk and later Eurovision winner Sandy Shaw, comedy legend Dudley Moore, and TV personality Stacey Solomon. Well, people like Dudley Moore and Ross Kemp, they were brought up there before the multiculturalism. I think what happened is the BNP actually won the election there, and as a result of them winning the election there, the Labour Party swamped the place with people of migrant heritage and literally forced multiculturalism on the place as a punishment for voting for the BNP. That was some years ago. So this short-term distrust, as was theorised in the Putnam report, this shows that it's not just short-term, it's long-term. Yet locals suggest Barking and Dagenham is on the decline. And while some still have hope and pride for the area, others agree with the gloomy new findings. So they see it as being on the decline. And I would say again, that's because of the multiculturalism. That's why they see it as declining. The latest report measures how often people chat to neighbours, how lonely they feel, local pride and levels of participation in civic life. Everything that was in that Putnam report. Next up in order on the unfriendly list are Stoke-on-Trent and Ashfield and Mansfield, both in Nottinghamshire, before Ipswich in fifth. And I will lay a bet now. I haven't actually seen these and I haven't checked the demographics, but I'll bet that every single one of these unfriendly places has a large amount of multiculturalism. When you go places that have a high homogeneity, doesn't matter where you are, doesn't matter if you're in the country, in the town, in Britain or in another country, if it has a high level of homogeneity, you'll find that the people there are friendly and you'll get the feeling that you can trust them. Now, I used to think this was just in the countryside. In Britain, I used to think it's much safer in the countryside. You can trust people much more. They're much friendlier people, much nicer people. And then I went to Latvia and Lithuania in the capital cities. And the capital cities of Latvia and Lithuania reminded me of the countryside. Not because there were animals there, but because it felt safe there. There was no litter. You could leave your mobile phone on the table and nobody was going to steal it if you went outside to have a cigarette, that sort of thing. And the reason for that is because they have high homogeneity. Latvia and Lithuania, the capital cities, are something like 99.5% white. And that's the reason why it was so safe there. And I realised that that's the reason why it feels so safe in the countryside, because the cities in Britain are all multicultural and the countryside is not multicultural. So that's what the British countryside and the capitals of Latvia and Lithuania have in common. It's the demographics. That's what makes people feel safe. That's what makes people feel that they're amongst friendly people, is being amongst your own race. when you're with your own ethnicity, you produce more oxytocin, and oxytocin is a hormone that the body produces that allows the mother to bond with their baby. And your body produces this hormone when you're amongst members of your own ethnic group, because that's who you're meant to be around. That's who you're supposed to be feeling social with. And for good reason, too. I mean, you have a survival instinct. If you're around people that don't speak your language and don't look like you, you're going to be on edge, because you're going to be worried about your own survival, because these people aren't a part of your own group. This is why babies instinctively show happy faces when they see people of their own ethnic group. And they show unhappy faces when they're shown faces of other ethnic groups, because the survival instinct is there. They know who they are most safe among. And this is found even with mothers. You would think that a baby recognizes a male, well, a baby does recognize a male face and a female face, but even a female face of another race, the baby is not happy with. It would prefer to have a male face of its own race because of this survival instinct. And they try and say this is white supremacy at an early age. But I think it's the same for all races. They would rather be amongst their own people. In contrast, the friendliest place in England was named as the Isles of Scilly. And of course, the Isles of Scilly is 100% white, followed by South Hams in Devon. Well, it might be 99.9%. There might be somebody there who isn't white, but the vast, vast majority of people on the Isles of Scilly are going to be white. Followed by South Hams in Devon, again, a rural area. Then West Devon. I've lived in West Devon. Again, 95% white. Derbyshire Dales and Richmond upon Thames in southwest London. Now, I was hearing about Derbyshire just the other day. Parts of it are still white and very friendly, and parts of it are multicultural, and it's quite a horror to actually live there, I've been told. So again, we see that the less multicultural an area is, the more friendly it is. The labelling of barking came as little surprise to Martha Davis, a grandmother in her late 60s, who has lived there for 28 years, but spoke of its downturn and her fears. And so she's noticed this downturn in the last 28 years, and it's in the last 28 years that all the people of migrant heritage were forced on the place after the BNP election. She said, "Absolutely, it's unfriendly. They spit in your face rather than talk to you. Keep yourself to yourself. Best thing to do in barking. I'm in and out. I wouldn't spend the whole day here. There are pickpockets. The place is dying. It's terrible. I feel unsafe. People are so miserable. If I collapsed, I think someone would rob me." You can compare that to places in Wales that are deprived. They're known as being deprived areas, but they're pretty much 100% white. Everybody's friendly. Everybody would help you if you were in trouble. It's literally the opposite of this. And this is in areas which are extremely poor, because they try to say, well, poverty is linked with this. But it's not poverty, because it's the same in the Appalachia in America, poorest part of America. But it's also the most white part of America. And it doesn't have a massive crime rate. It's not poverty that causes crime. These white areas that are supposed deprived areas in Wales, they have some of the lowest crime rates in the whole of the United Kingdom. And the reason for that, I would say, is because they have homogeneity. And they essentially they're all white as well, because if you look at the incarceration rates for other ethnicities, you'll see that they have a much higher incarceration rate for crime, basically. They're more likely to commit crimes, the same as men are more likely to commit crimes than women. Black people, for instance, are more likely to commit crimes than white people. Chinese and Japanese are less likely to commit crimes than white people. So if you have an area which is entirely white, it's not going to suffer from the sort of crime rate that you would have if an area was entirely black, where it would have five times the violent crime rate as the area that was all white. And as I say, it's not down to poverty. And this proves that it's not down to poverty. While many the Daily Mail spoke up for their area, plenty criticised miserable and uncommunicative residents for hardly helping its feel and reputation. And I dare say there's probably also a problem with people speaking other languages That may be a reason why they're uncommunicative. They may not speak English. The unfriendliness findings come from an independent commission on community and cohesion study using data from the government's community life survey. We often hear about this community and cohesion, yet the government won't actually do anything to improve community and cohesion. The best way you could improve community is just to have segregation, have segregated communities. They would then be happy. They would then be cohesive. Muslims would be happy living amongst other Muslims. White people would be happy living amongst other white people. But they don't want to do that. They just want to mix everybody in together. And then they'll carry out studies like this and say, oh, what's made the place so unfriendly? As if Robert Putnam's study never existed. The area scored 8 out of 100 on the National Conversations Connection Barometer. 10% of locals say they feel lonely often or always, and only 21% said they could trust their neighbours. It is amazing how this just confirms everything that Robert Putnam found in his survey. Literally the same, pretty much the same questions they must have asked them. And that must be because he must have found this wherever he went. I mean, that was the largest survey on diversity ever done. And wherever he went that was multicultural, he must have got these sort of answers. And now you have it here in black and white in Barking. It is a view shared on the street where residents fear being spat upon or attacked. Omar Mukhtar, 40, who has been in Barking for 23 years, said it depends on your aura. You can interact with anyone, people are approachable, but they could smash your face in, but also ask for directions. And this Omar Mukhtar, who's been there for 23 years, he would have been one of the people that went there after Labour imported these people of migrant heritage into the area. Local resident Faisal Khan, who has lived in Barking for 6 years, said yes and no on whether it is unfriendly. It depends on the person, basically. People are chatty, every kind of people you find in Barking. Some people are good as gold. I go with the flow. I just try and listen to others instead of debating. So what he's saying there is, yes, it's okay so long as you agree with what the other person is saying. If you disagree with them, then you might be violently attacked, I guess is what he's implying there, of saying just listen to others instead of debating. Or he may say, well, just don't say anything at all. Just listen to what they say and hope that they're not going to attack you. Cafe worker Sally O'Brien, 44, said, our customers are lovely, but the average person out there isn't. There's a fear of what might happen. People are rude and obnoxious. The community has gone as well, really. People don't know each other. It's a lost area. Again, that's not something you're going to have in an area that is full of white people. No, it's not going to be that people don't know each other. Or there's no sense of community. There would be a sense of community and people would know each other. And they wouldn't be too frightened to say hello. And they wouldn't be suspicious of people because they might be conspiring with these other groups against the in-group. People don't even smile. They constantly spit out there or they're on their phones. And I wonder if this spitting is to do with this marungi, I think they call it, or cat. And the Somalians chew it. It's a plant which has got a drug in it. And they chew it all the time in Africa and then they spit it out. And it's part of their culture, I think. I think that's the reason why it's still allowed in Britain, this cat plant. It's like an amphetamine, a stimulant. But they're always chewing that and then spitting it out. So I wonder if Barking doesn't have perhaps a Somali population there or a high African population. Our cafe is very friendly, but being out there is like another world. And I can just guess that, well, you can tell from the name, can't you? Sally O'Brien, it's an Irish name. The cafe worker will be a white person, and that will be a cafe that is frequented by white people. That will be why it's very friendly. Martin Whitting, 44. And I say very friendly for white people. I mean, there might very well be black cafes or there might be Muslim cafes and they would be frequented by black people or Muslim people. And I'm sure that the blacks and Muslims would feel more at home amongst their own people. So they would go to their own cafes. People do self-segregate when given the chance. Martin Whitting, 44, who has run an ice cream van in Barking for several years, said in response to people in Barking being unfriendly, It depends, really. If they can speak English and communicate, then it is a good community. So there you go. So what Sadiq is admitting, that there are a large number of people there that can't even speak English or communicate. So how are you going to have a sense of community when people don't even speak the same language as you? There's lots of drugs, and that's the trouble. It's a nice place, but a bit unpredictable. You never know what you'll get. Well, drugs aren't the cause of this either, because you probably get more drugs at Glastonbury Festival than anywhere else. And look at the crime rate for Glastonbury Festival. I mean, it just doesn't really have one. You might have some people that are arrested for drugs. That's it. You won't have violence. You won't have murders. You won't have people spitting at each other and violently attacking each other, as you get here in Barking. Janice, a woman in her 40s, said, "It's just weird. Some people are polite, but everywhere I go, it is bad mental health. Barking is bad for mental health. People don't smile. They don't speak." And again, I think the people that are probably being polite and speaking to her are the English people. And the ones that she is looking on with suspicion will be the ones that aren't English. That's why they're not smiling. That's why they're not speaking. They don't understand your body language, and you don't understand theirs. And that's why you end up thinking that, being fearful and saying it's bad for mental health. Of course it's going to be bad for your mental health, having people around you that don't speak your language, that have different cultures, different body language. It's going to be dreadful for your mental health. Think what it's like for the poor white children that are now at these multicultural schools that have to put up with this at their school. It's no wonder that they're not doing so well at their schoolwork now. Adnan Tariq, a shopkeeper in Barking for 14 years, said, "Maybe yes, maybe no. I'm not going to say everyone is horrible. If you walk around, you'll see yourself people are nice. What you hear and what you see are different. I'm pretty sure there are worse areas than Barking." And again, he's another man of migrant heritage that has arrived there in the last 14 years. Barking used to be a bit trickier, but a few years passed by and it's getting better now. There used to be gangs, but they've removed bad council estates and they've cleaned up Barking. Well, he might be happy living like that. He might think that that's quite normal to be living like that and not trusting your neighbours. But the white people that are there, the older ones, they will remember what Britain was like when it was still ethnically British. And they will remember what life was like when their children used to play in the street and they could trust everyone and they could trust their neighbours. So that they're the ones that realise that there has been this big difference there. The minorities aren't going to realise that. Dave Parsons, 45, a delivery driver, felt people were often rude, adding, "I think it's the area that gets people down. They probably don't think they've done well if they are here." Well, I think he's right. It is the area. It's the multiculturalism. That will be what gets people down. Perhaps somebody might have mentioned that, but they certainly didn't include it in this article. Perhaps they're far too clever for that, and they knew that they would just be implying this, as in, what's the difference between, say, Barking and the Scilly Isles, apart from one is the town and one is the country? Well, the difference is that one is ethnically homogenous and the other one is multicultural. "I get a lot of people who simply don't say thank you. It's sad, really, but I am used to it." Now, imagine that, a delivery driver knocking at your door, and the person he hands the parcel to just snatches it away and doesn't even say thank you. I mean, that might be because people don't speak the same language. It could also be that they come from a different culture. They may not say thank you in their culture. That may be something that only white people do. The National Conversation is run by the Conservative ex-Home Secretary Sir Sajid Javid and former Labour Policy Coordinator John Cruddas, himself a former MP for Dagenham, between 2001 and 2024. So they're not really going to point out that the difference is multiculturalism, are they? Because you've got Sajid Javid there, who obviously benefits from multiculturalism. I mean, that's how he came to be in the Conservative Party in Britain. It's because of the multicultural policy of former governments. Organisers say it aims to help better understand the country's state of connection and cohesion to create a vision for how people can live well together. really, that all they'd have to do is just look at what is the difference between the area, this area barking, where people don't get on and they don't have any connection, they don't have any cohesion. And what's the difference between it and the Isles of Scilly, apart from ones in the town and ones in the country? The glaringly obvious difference is multiculturalism. The foreword from its first report, published last year, claimed that communal life in Britain is under threat due to declining infrastructure in institutions. No, it's not under threat due to that. Community life in Britain is under threat because of multiculturalism, not infrastructure in institutions. It's the multiculturalism which is causing the declining infrastructure and institutions. We have too many people here for our infrastructure to cope. It also says that communal life in Britain is under threat due to a loss in trust of those institutions, growing inequality and chronic neglect from policymakers. It doesn't mention anywhere there at all about immigration, does it? The pressure that immigration is going to put on the infrastructure and our institutions. And this loss of trust in those institutions is probably because those institutions have people there that aren't of your own ethnic group. I mean, the same fear about these other groups, the same instincts are going to take over if you're at one of these institutions and it's full of foreign people. The same as you're going to get that in your community life. You're going to have those instincts telling you that something isn't right. Multiculturalism is the cause of all of these problems. And I say that as an abstract idea. It's multiculturalism that is the cause of these. But the cause of multiculturalism itself is our establishment, ourselves, effectively. We're the ones that put these policies into action, not us individually, not Radio Albion's listeners individually, but our political representatives, our elected representatives. They are the ones that brought these policies in. It also identified threats causing social disconnection, such as the mismanagement of immigration, cost of living pressures, and social media-driven extremism. What's social media-driven extremism then? Well, that's effectively videos that people put online of multicultural areas. So it's not as if it's fake or it's misinformation. When you see a black gang beating the hell out of a white woman on a video, that's not misinformation or disinformation. When you see black so-called teens rampaging through a store, grabbing everything that they can get their hands on, that's not misinformation. I mean, it may be right. It may drive people towards extremism. But it's not that it's the social media doing that. It's the actions of these groups that have been brought into our country. It's their actions which pushes people towards extremism. It's not the social media. And if it wasn't on social media, it would be the people living in that area that saw this sort of thing going on. It says here the mismanagement of immigration. That's one of the causes of this disconnect. Well, who is it that mismanaged the immigration? Who is it that did that? Well, it was the Labour Party after the BNP got into office in that area. And if you want to stop these problems, you have no immigration. It's not that it's been mismanaged. It's that there has been mass immigration. There has been immigration into that area. They filled it up full of foreigners deliberately. That's not mismanagement of immigration. That's a deliberate policy. The Commission warned the results show that the UK was sitting on a tinderbox of disconnection and division. Mr. Cruddas said, "I nearly choked on my cornflakes when my old area came rock bottom. I think government stats miss a lot of what really makes an area tick, including my old town. But that's why we have developed it, to spark a conversation. Because what we really want is your view on your area." We've got the top 10 most friendly areas: Isles of Scilly, South Hams, West Devon, Derbyshire Dales, Richmond upon Thames, Stratford on Avon, Stroud, Rutland, Winchester, Lewis, all white areas. Top 10 least friendly areas: Barking and Dagenham, Stoke-on-Trent, Ashfield, Mansfield, Ipswich, Walsall, Brent, Sandwell, Thurrock, Crawley. All industrial, multicultural areas. And really, the government hasn't got a leg to stand on saying, well, we didn't know this was going to happen, because this Putnam report was out in 2007. That's and it's been known since then that multiculturalism is going to result in this. This is what the end result is. And the solution to this is to just have segregation, isn't it? It's to say to the Muslims, would you rather be living amongst other Muslims? And they're going to say yes. If you say to the Chinese, would you rather be living amongst other Chinese? They will say yes. Say to the Caribbeans, would you rather be living amongst Caribbeans? And I think in large part, most of them would say yes. And if you say to white people, would you rather be living amongst white people? Well, a certain portion would deny that they would rather that. They would go against their instincts and they would virtue signal and say, oh, no, we like multiculturalism. But if they were actually put in white areas, they would see that life was much better there. I mean, as it says here, places like Stratford-on-Avon, the Scilly Isles, they're all full of white people and they're all happy. The multicultural areas are the areas that are unhappy. And I noticed it isn't any of these areas that are sort of majority black. They haven't come up as unhappy or majority Muslim as unhappy. It's the multicultural areas. That's where this problem is. To solve this problem, all you need to do is have segregation. You could say to the different ethnic groups, well, you can live in the cities, you can have your own quarters in the cities, and we'd encourage white people to move out of the cities. We'll give them reduced cost on and help to move out of the cities. And you could have these segregated areas, you could have white people in the country, and you could have these other ethnic groups in the cities. I think that would solve the problem. And you could also have areas, if people wanted to live in multicultural areas, then they could. But I think you should have areas that are reserved for white people. And if necessary, have areas that are reserved for blacks and Muslims. I guess that's idealism, really. Ideally, you would want the country to go back to being 100% homogenous, just white people. But I don't think we'd be able to do that now that the genie is out of the bottle, and especially not because of the way our economy is managed, because it's all based on usury. It has to have constant debt inflation. In order to have constant debt inflation, it has to have a constant supply of human beings. That's the reason for the migration. But even if we do have to have a constant supply of these other ethnic groups, why do we all have to be living together? Which clearly makes people unhappy. Because if the banks said, oh, you must have this immigration, there's nowhere that it says that we must all live together. Surely we could campaign for segregation without the markets getting spooked, as happened with Liz Truss when she made some tinkering around the edges. We were told, oh, the markets have got spooked and the mortgages have gone up and the pensions have gone down and everybody is desperate to get Liz Truss out. It would, something like that might happen again if somebody tried to put a stop to immigration. But if somebody was to say, well, I think segregation would be a better way to live, why don't we live these segregated lives? I don't think that would spook the markets. And the way that it was, if it was presented carefully, I think you'd have all these other ethnic groups on board with it and saying, yes, we would much rather live like that, where we can follow our own culture. Multiculturalism doesn't do anybody any good. It just weakens the host nation. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.